Welcome to the Minnesota Military Radio Hour, where we bring you information about Minnesota's National Guard, military community, Beyond the Yellow Ribbon program, and Department of Veteran Affairs. Your host is Tom Lyons, the founder and owner of Phalon Partners Limited, a Twin Cities merger and acquisition advisory firm. Tom is also a Vietnam veteran of the United States Air Force and a member of the VFW and American Legion. Now the host of Minnesota Military Radio Hour, Tom Lyons.
Welcome to the Minnesota Military Radio Hour. I'm Tom Lyons. On today's show, we head to the jungles of Vietnam with the women who served there, and we'll meet the founder of Tee It Up for the Troops. But first, it's time for Generally Speaking, a weekly message from the Adjutant General of the Minnesota National Guard, Major General Rick Nash.
Last Wednesday, Governor Dayton, the Minnesota State Colleges and Universities, called MinSCU, and their Board of Trustees installed Stephen Rosenstone as their chancellor. Congratulations, Chancellor Rosenstone, and thank you for your commitment to education opportunities for current military service members and veterans. With its 31 institutions, including 24 two-year colleges and 7 state universities, the Minnesota State Colleges and University System is the largest single provider of higher education in the state of Minnesota. The colleges and universities operate 54 campuses in 47 Minnesota communities and serve about 250,000 students in credit-based courses. Overall, the system produces about 33,500 graduates each year. Many of those graduates are members of the Minnesota National Guard who utilize their state tuition reimbursement at MinSCU institutions. Under the leadership of Chancellor Rosenstone's predecessor, Chancellor James McCormick, MinSCU has become known for groundbreaking military-friendly policies, such as fee waivers for deployed service members, deferred tuition, fees and book costs for those who may not have yet received their Veteran Administration compensation, credit for prior learning, in-state tuition costs for active duty service members stationed in Minnesota, and transfer credit for military education. Thanks, MinSCU, for your support of the Guard and our families. Again, congratulations, Chancellor Rosenstone. We are looking forward to working with you and the great MinSCU team across the state to advance the civilian education of our citizen soldiers and airmen.
Thank you, General Nash. For more information, please go to MinnesotaMilitaryRadioHour.com. Our first guest today is J.B. Ball, founder and past president of Tee It Up for the Troops. J.B. is vice president of BC&I Wealth Management and has been employed in the financial services business for over 24 years. He is the proud son of a soldier, brother of a soldier, friend of a soldier, and father of a soldier. J.B., welcome to the Minnesota Military Radio Hour.
Thank you for the opportunity.
J.B., it's a pretty interesting story. Can you tell me, where did Tee It Up for the Troops come from? How did you get that idea?
Well, Tee It Up for the Troops started back in 2005, but the original story started after 9/11 when my son put his college education on hold and enlisted in the Army. He was deployed in 2005, and friends and family in a Bible study group that I was part of asked what they could send to him, and when he called home, I asked what he needed. He said, "Pops, forget about me. Do something for the families and the soldiers back home." So to honor that request, we started a small golf event that has expanded nationally, and now 7 years later, we've been able to raise a little over $4 million and spread the wealth around the country.
So, J.B., let's go back to the first year when you were responding to that request from your son. What did you come up with? How did you start? Where did the name come from, and how did you start?
Well, the names originally, it was ironic that we started with Buds and Strokes. As a kid, my dad used to take us to see his Army buddies. Growing up, that was our vacation. So we thought we'd maybe name it Buds and Strokes, but then we started talking about it. And Tee It Up for the Troops came out of conversations with different people, and it's kind of stuck. It's been a real honor to be a part of it and see the growth that's happened.
So over these years, how many tournaments have you done, and how's it grown, and how have you kept up with it?
Well, we've had, I guess, over 30 states that have participated with us at some level on a tournament, but we've had donations, I think, from all 50 states at some level. Here locally, we have events in Coon Rapids, Woodbury, Mendota Heights, Rochester, Mankato. The communities are getting behind it here locally, and they're expanding. But we had 27 major tournaments last year.
Did you ever dream that first year when you were doing your first tournament that it would spread beyond Minnesota and all across the United States?
Well, you like to think big, but you don't always know what's going to happen. And sometimes you're surprised by the goodness of the American public out there. They've really stepped up. There's been golfers from coast to coast that have just embraced the idea and run with it themselves. And we've got committees across the country that are joining. And we actually established our first chapter in California. And now both Illinois and Florida are asking us to establish chapters there.
We're speaking with J.B. Ball, the founder and past president of Tee It Up for the Troops on Minnesota Military Radio, right here on Twin Cities News Talk, AM 1130. J.B., Tee It Up for Troops now is a nonprofit foundation?
Yeah, we've been a 501c3. We had Meager and Gear and a couple of the law firms here in town were kind enough to do some pro bono work for us early on and help us get established and have helped us to do our copyright with our trademark protection and those types of things. But as a 501c3, we've now gone national in scope.
And the mission of Tee It Up for the Troops?
Well, it's really to honor, respect, and remember all those who serve. It's not just about current conflict. We're generational. We've been able to donate to over 60 programs across the country with less than a 5% administrative expense. And in doing so, we've been able to reach out to the Vietnam veterans who some have literally told me it's the first time they ever heard thank you was at some of the events there. And to work with some of the honor flights and the World War II veterans, it's just been an extreme honor to meet these individuals from coast to coast.
JB, I have to ask you this. When do you find time to work?
You do what you need to do. Everybody gets involved with a charity, I think, because of a passion. Sometimes it becomes a personal piece, no matter what you are, whether it's Alzheimer's or cancer, whatever it is. When it comes personal, you find the time for it. And my schedule is a little bit different. I took this year off, but I used to run marathons also. So I'd run early in the morning, and that was my prayer time and my private time, and then I'd go to work and work from about 7 to noon and then call the Midwest calls, and then after 5 o'clock make the West Coast calls. But early in the morning, I was always talking to the East Coast, and you find the time, you make the time when it becomes a passion.
Full speed ahead all the time.
Always.
And JB, what is the goal of Tee It Up for Troops? We've heard the mission. What is the goal? What is your organization's goal?
Our original goal was to turn the Friday prior to September 11th into a national day of golf across the country. There's over 27 million golfers. If we got them each to donate $10, that was a huge amount of money. And we could change some lives. And literally, we've talked, and I think we've actually been able to save some lives with what's been going on with the military. We've been anxious about growing it from coast to coast, but bottom line, the organization is there to just say thank you to those who serve, whether it's current generation or prior generation. If they don't come out and realize that we appreciate what they're doing for us and what they have done for us, then we haven't accomplished our goal.
And JB, over these years, you've gathered up a lot of supporters, but you've added quite a number of people to your board as well, haven't you?
We've expanded the board. We started out with just five of us. It was a few core people. It was myself and Colonel Wisdom, who's a Vietnam veteran, medevac chopper pilot. It was Todd Christofferson, who was also another father of a soldier that went to high school with my son. And then we also had Jeff Anderson, who was a realtor here in town, who was a close friend who helped get us off the ground. And then Steve Watson joined us, who was the general manager at Mendicota Country Club. And that was the core group initially. And then it expanded to about 15 people now. And we've got some really good people that have joined us.
So you've collected up some pretty passionate folks, haven't you?
I think, like I said before, if you do find a passion for it, it comes through, and everybody that's currently on the board really understands why they're there, and they're doing a great job for us.
JB, we have to take a short break, but we'll be back with more about Tee It Up for the Troops right after these messages. This is the Minnesota Military Radio Hour on Twin Cities News Talk, AM 1130. Welcome back to the Minnesota Military Radio Hour. I'm Tom Lyons. Today we're talking to J.B. Ball, the founder and past president of Tee It Up for the Troops. J.B., you've educated us pretty well in the first segment about Tee It Up the Troops and what it is. And, of course, you're out there with this nonprofit foundation raising funds to support the troops and so forth. But you told me an interesting story while we were on the break. Do you want to share that with the listeners?
I'd be happy to. We're able to spread the money out to a number of different organizations across the country. And one of them happened to be a service dog program, Paws for Purple Hearts, in D.C. with Bethesda and with the National Intrepid Center of Excellence. And there was a young Marine who was having a problem sleeping through the night. He was only sleeping for about a half hour at a time. And they put Birdie, who happens to be one of the black labs that's named after Tee It Up for the Troops, is where they got the name Birdie, in the room with them to sleep at night. And he ended up sleeping for 5.5 hours, which he woke up the next morning rested, and refreshed. And as a Marine, he was watching his daughter get ready for school, and he hollered at her and he said, "You stop right where you are. You forgot something." And she stopped dead in her tracks and turned around and looked at him, and then she realized she had forgotten her backpack. She was staying at the Fisher House and leaving for school. And then Rick Yount, who happened to do the training with the dogs, turned to the young man and he said, "Now, what's the rest of the issue?" And when they're training these dogs, they give commands, but they also have to give that feedback for the praise at the end of it to train the dogs. And when her daughter learned to pick up the backpack and turn around and go back to school, he said, "Come here and give me a big hug." He said, "Hey, you have a great day at school." He said, "I love you, and I'll see you when you get back." And that whole process, he's become much closer with his daughter and with his wife and family. So it makes a huge difference.
And learned how to be a dad instead of a Marine.
Exactly.
Good lesson. Sometimes hard to learn when you come back from war zone.
Yeah, yeah.
JB, you've done a great job since 2005. I understand you've raised over $3 million. Over 95% of it goes to charities and so forth. And you've raised a lot of money. You work hard to raise the money. You're supporting the troops. Can you tell us a little bit about the organizations that benefit from all your work?
Yeah, we've been able to raise now. We just cleared $4 million here just recently. So we've expanded. This is a good year for us here to expand even further. But the main organizations that we've worked with are things like the Fisher House and Disabled Sports USA, Intrepid Fallen Heroes Fund, and the National Intrepid Center of Excellence, the Wounded Warrior Project, Hope for the Warriors. But we've been able to fill a lot of small gaps with things like Operation Give a Hug, and we've been able to reach out to the Blue Star Mothers and the Gold Star Mothers and do different things across the country. Fisher House is kind of a home away from home. The DSUSA is Disabled Sports USA, and we found that people that are involved in sports are much more employable than they are when they're not involved because they're more active, they're more social. With the Intrepid, we're working on PTSD and TBI and the burn victims. And with Hope for the Warriors, we're able to do what's called a Warrior's Wish program. So we're able to do things for individual soldiers that we don't normally do. We normally do things that are going to affect a number of people at one time.
We're speaking with J.B. Ball, the founder and past president of Tee It Up for the Troops. And J.B., I know there's a couple of local organizations. There's a lot of organizations you've helped, but one of them is Serving Our Troops.
Yeah, that's a great organization. A bunch of restaurateurs here in town that have gotten together, and they've done the, I think the slogan for them is, "There's nothing like having a meal with the family," and they're able to connect the warriors that are serving overseas with their families here and have a meal together.
And they just put on an event over at Fort McCoy for 2,400 First Brigade Combat Team folks that went to troops that went to Kuwait.
They did, and I think they're on their fifth or sixth time that they've done this. They've done Bosnia, and they've done different events. We actually had an opportunity. I had an opportunity to join them in December of 2009 to go to Kuwait and to Iraq and serve some 12-ounce tenderloins to the guys for the holidays. And I had a young man from Kansas City walk up to me and said, "This is the best steak I've ever had." So I don't know what he'd been eating prior to that in Kansas City, but he loved the steaks that were sent from Minnesota.
And that's a big event. It costs a lot of money, and there's a lot of folks that work hard on it, but I'm sure they're happy to have you help and support it as well.
Well, Tee It Up for the Troops as the organization has been able to support it. It's not really me, but it's a lot of really good people across the country, and in the state here has been terrific. But the guys that run that organization are great. Pat Harris and Danny O'Gara and John Marshall, the rest of them are really good guys. They understand what they're trying to do, and they just trying to reach out and keep the family connected.
JB, I know your organization's also been involved with the honor flights.
We've been a small part of that. Jerry Kaiser does a great job with that. We've been able to offer the ground transportation for some of those flights from Illinois and Rochester and here locally. It's really a privilege to see those individuals get off the plane at 12:30, 1 o'clock at night. It looks like they just woke up. They get their second wind. And
after a very long day.
Very, very long day. They leave very early in the morning, but they get a chance to tour the memorials and spend the day with their band of brothers and come home. And it's just a treat to see them get off that plane. And they're walking tall and very proud of what they've done, and they should be.
And I know that from personal experience that you've helped us with the Minnesota Military Family Foundation as well.
Well, you guys reach out. You're having an immediate impact here locally. And every event we do across the country, we try and keep some of the money in the backyard of where it was raised. And so if we can take some of the funds from the events that we're doing here to help MMFF out, you have an immediate impact with the family when there's a need. It's a great gap to fill, and you do a great job with it.
Financial emergency for families of our deployed troops, it's pretty important. JB, we were also talking earlier, you've got a couple events coming up.
We do. We have a new event that actually Colonel Wisdom, who has been involved with, was a medevac chopper pilot in Nam, and he married his wife, who was a nurse on his second tour in Vietnam. And we've decided that Tee It Up for the Troops, with his direction, is going to do a women's event at the Wilds in Prior Lake next summer. It will be for women by women. The only thing they're looking for from the men is to help with the registration and carry the bags and get them set up at the on the carts and just let the ladies enjoy their day. They're kind of that forgotten group. And then we've got another event coming up in Orlando in January, the 4th through the 8th, with Reunion Golf Course, and we're going to reach out generational there so that the individuals that, if you want to have a reunion, why not do it in Orlando in January, especially for Minnesota? But we're reaching out to some of the warriors who were recovering with each other at Walter Reed and Bethesda and Bamsey, and get some of those guys back together that haven't seen each other in the last 5 or 6 years. And then for the Vietnam vets, to ones that they've been exchanging Christmas cards with for the last 40 years, let's have a reunion down in Orlando in January.
Sounds like fun to me. JB, if our listeners want to get involved with Tee It Up for the Troops, where do they go?
Two things. One, you can call 952-646-2490, or you can go to the website www.teeituptforthetroops.org. We'd love to hear from you.
JB, you're doing a great job. Any final thoughts for our listeners?
No, I appreciate the time you've given us today, Tom, and I appreciate it very much.
You and your board are doing a terrific job. Keep it up. And that was JB Ball, the founder and past president of Tee It Up for the Troops, out there helping support our troops and their families. Let's visit this week's Support Our Troops Showcase and discuss how a thoughtful care package became the perfect antidote for a homesick soldier. It was a chilly winter night in the desert for Corporal Patrick Cole. It was his birthday, and being 6,000 miles away from home didn't help. Patrick was midway through his 12-hour shift, pulling gate guard in the heart of Iraq. It was quiet, and Patrick had too much time to think about last year's birthday, and all the other holidays for that matter. Then Patrick's duty sergeant brought their midnight meals. Knowing it was Patrick's birthday, the duty sergeant also brought a recently received care package. The package contained handmade letters from a class of third graders from Minnesota. One card read, "Thanks for fighting for me. I hope you do a good job." And another kid wrote, "I hope you have fun in Iraq and come back safely." Reading the letters, Patrick couldn't help but smile. The letters were perfect, full of random thoughts and sincere concern that only a youngster could put on paper. For Patrick, that moment is clearly remembered, even years after returning home. Thanks to all of you that write letters and send care packages. Your actions exemplify going beyond the yellow ribbon. Beyond the Yellow Ribbon connects and coordinates organizations, agencies, and companies to provide resources and support to service members and their families. To learn how you can help bring our troops all the way home, visit beyondtheyellowribbon.org. Coming up next, we'll talk to the author of Sisterhood of War, Minnesota Women in Vietnam, and two nurses who served there on Minnesota Military Radio, right here on Twin Cities News Talk, AM 1130. Welcome back to the Minnesota Military Radio Hour. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. It's time for the Commissioner's Corner, a weekly update from the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. Now here's Commissioner Larry Shelido.
For years, women have been serving in the military along their male comrades. However, their service often goes unrecognized. Over a quarter of a million women served in various roles in the U.S. Armed Forces during the Vietnam War era. Approximately 6,000 of those women were military nurses in Vietnam. Author and historian Kim Heikala has reached out to 15 of these women from Minnesota in her book, Sisterhood of War, Women in Vietnam. When these veterans returned from the war, many did their best to hide their veteran status and suppress the memories of Vietnam by carrying on with civilian life. Over time, the women could no longer ignore the memories and bonded together for support and to bring recognition to the important role of women veterans. Today, the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs is taking an active role in recognizing the service of women veterans and assisting them with reintegration. To learn more, visit us online at minnesotaveteran.org.
Thank you, Commissioner Shalito. For more information, please go to MinnesotaMilitaryRadioHour.com. Our guest in this part of the show is Kim Heikkila, who is an adjunct instructor in the History Department at St. Catherine University, where she teaches courses in U.S. history, U.S. women's history, the Vietnam War, and the 1960s. Kim is also the author of Sisterhood of War, Women in Vietnam. Kim, welcome to the Minnesota Military Radio Hour.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
Sounds like you've got a lot of interesting things you teach over at St. Kate's.
Oh, I do. History is just a fascinating subject.
It is, and you've written quite a book on the women in Vietnam, and as a Vietnam veteran, I was pretty interested in most of what's in there. How did that come to be?
Well, you know, I don't have any personal memories of the war myself. I was born in 1968, so I don't, you know, maybe I have some memories of seeing some helicopters on TV, but I didn't grow up with the war as part of my life. Nobody in my family served. And, you know, in the 70s, not many people were talking about it in general. Culturally, we didn't learn about it in school, nothing like that. Until I was in high school and one of my teachers mentioned something about the war. But most of what I heard when I was a kid growing up was that, you know, don't ever ask a veteran anything about their service. Don't talk to them. Don't bring it up. It's just too difficult a topic. So that was the culture in which I grew up. And I also, you know, was in the high school in the 80s, mid-80s. And that was a time when a lot of these kind of second wave of Vietnam War movies were coming out, films like Platoon and Born on the 4th of July and Full Metal Jacket. And they were very interesting to me, and I watched them, and I read novels, and I took a course in college about the war, and I was really moved by the stories that were told in these books and these movies and even in the course. About, you know, young men who were called to service for their country and went and faced the horrors of war and came back and faced a hostile or at least indifferent country. But I'm kind of embarrassed now to admit that it wasn't until I was in graduate school in the 90s that I started asking myself, well, what about the women? Where did the women fit into this story?
I can only remember the movie Purple Heart.
Oh, I remember that one, Cheryl Ladd. Yes, indeed. Not the top-ranked Vietnam film that I've ever seen, but yeah, I remember it was out there. So when I was in graduate school, then I decided that I was going to turn this into my dissertation, and did, and interviewed 20 women for my dissertation, both nurses and women who served in enlisted and other capacities. And then when I finished graduate school in 2002, I had the good fortune of doing some work for the Minnesota Historical Society, and they were interested in the stories of Minnesota women who served. And so it turned into the book, focusing on 15 nurses from Minnesota or with strong connections to Minnesota who served in the war.
But there were actually thousands of women who served in Vietnam, correct?
Yes, yes, there were. Probably 7,500 or so. Nobody knows for sure because there are no hard and fast statistics that tracked by gender. But the best estimates are about 7,500 women served in Vietnam, and about 90%, 85 to 90%, 6,000 of those were nurses.
We're speaking with Kim Heikkila, the author of Sisterhood of War, Minnesota Women in Vietnam, on the Minnesota Military Radio Hour here on Twin Cities News Talk, AM 1130. Kim, you write about 15 Minnesota veterans, women veterans, nurses, and you brought one of them with you today.
Yes, I did. Sitting here to my right is Mary Beth Crowley, who served in the Army Nurse Corps and was in Vietnam in 1970 and 1971.
Welcome to the show, Mary Beth.
Thank you.
Now, how did you get into nursing?
That probably started probably when I was very young, and just kind of kept on thinking about it and went off to college and ended up in the School of Nursing. So I think I was meant to be one.
And how did you get to the United States Army Nurse Corps?
I started as a student working at the Veterans Hospital in Minneapolis on an orthopedic floor, and this would have been 1967, and met some interesting people there. The majority of the patients on this floor were Vietnam vets. Many had lost limbs. I remember one particular individual who was very remarkable, had ended up as a triple amputee. And just from talking with them as I'd provide cares to them, it really interested me in Vietnam. And I think I decided I wanted to see what was really going on there. And so ended up joining the student nurse program about 6 months before I graduated. And so right after I graduated, I went off to basic training.
And how did that wake you up just a little bit?
Well, I think in basic training, and I think a lot of the nurses at that point weren't really thinking about this as a war. You know, it was going to be sort of fun and interesting being in Texas and learning how to be a military officer. And then once we ended up in the war, things were a little more serious than I think anybody had anticipated.
And, of course, before you went to Vietnam, you had extensive nursing experience, right?
I had 4 months as a nurse. By that time, I started out in Walter Reed on surgical floors. So I didn't, I mean, I knew how to take care of patients in a fairly modern hospital, but not in a field hospital by any means.
And was it quite a shock when you first arrived in Vietnam?
It's a good thing I was young, because I think it's much easier when you're younger to kind of fly by the seat of your pants. You know, the people who'd been there 6 months longer than you had taught you how to do things. And then as I'd become more experienced and newer people would come in, then that would be my role. So it was sort of the blind leading the blind. But fortunately, we all made it and I think took wonderful care of the patients we had.
Can you remember how crazy the first week was when you got over there?
Well, I remember just trying to get to my duty station. I started out in Long Bend, and I think we waited 15 hours for the plane to come that never arrived. So it took me about a week of little flights all over Vietnam to finally end up in An K.
But you finally got there.
I did, yep.
And how soon were you taking care of patients?
Well, the next day. You know, I got there about 8 at night, so they didn't put me on the floor then. So by 7 the next morning.
And was this what you expected? Did they brief you on this before you went to Vietnam?
No, but I think it was sort of what I expected. I didn't go there to look at, you know, books and read up on it. I went there, I think, to be in the action.
Ladies, we have to take a short break, but we're going to come back and talk a little bit more about what life was like in Vietnam for a nurse in the United States Army. We're speaking with Kim Heikkila and Mary Beth Crowley. Kim is the author of Sisterhood of War, Minnesota Women in Vietnam, on Minnesota Military Radio, right here on Twin Cities News Talk, AM 1130. Please stay with us. Welcome back to the Minnesota Military Radio Hour. I'm your host, Tom Lyons, and I'm here with the former U.S. Army nurse, Mary Beth Crowley, and Kim Heikkila, the author of Sisterhood of War, Minnesota Women in Vietnam. Mary Beth, before we took a break, we were talking about your first week in Vietnam, which I can remember my first week, but after that it got blurry. But while you were over there, and I'm quoting from the book, it says, more often than not, your patients would see you as a pal, like a sister, roles that you assumed easily with humor, and your corpsman good-naturedly referred to you as Gracie Slick. Where did that come from?
I don't know. They sort of thought, I guess, I looked like her or something, and I wasn't too sure myself. But at the time, I still have sort of curly hair, but at the time it was really curly, and I couldn't do anything with it, so I ended up wearing it in pigtails. And the one hospital I served at for 9 months, I used to wear different colored ribbons in it, and I don't know if that had to do with it or not, but...
And, of course, Gracie Slick was the lead singer for Jefferson Airplane, for those young folks out there listening to us. And there's another story in here about at the same place, you went and took a swim in the ocean, and a GI came up and wanted to take your picture.
I think I'd been caught in the undertow at the time, but after kind of struggling, I wasn't quite losing my life, but kind of struggling to get back up to the beach, I made it and had probably one pigtail coming off the top of my head and the other one off the side. And the bottoms of my swimsuit were so full of sand that I could barely walk. And I mean, I probably looked like the wrath of God with seaweed hanging off of me. And this GI comes running up and says, ma'am, can I take your picture? My family won't believe this. And I thought, oh my goodness, if I look this great to you, then go right ahead.
And Mary Beth, of course, you spent how long in Vietnam on that tour?
A little over a year.
And you had a little bit of fun with the swimsuit and Gracie Slick and some of the other things, but mm-hmm. You spent most of the year taking care of some young GIs that were some of them mortally wounded.
Yep. Uh-huh.
And it had to be a long, hard, tough tour, wasn't
mm-hmm.
it?
Yep. I think how I managed during that year anyway, I remember I used to cry in the shower. And I didn't cry in front of anybody, but I'd end up doing it in the shower when nobody else could see me. And I only had one time when I cried in front of anybody. And I think it was better that I wasn't being, you know, the big crybaby all the time. But I managed to hold it together whenever I was at work.
And those wounded troops were, I'm sure, when they opened their eyes and saw you taking care of them, pretty happy, weren't they?
Oh, you sure, you know, a nurse over there could hear all kinds of things. It was kind of interesting. I should have been writing them all down, but I didn't. But I think I kind of took everything with a grain of salt and smiled and, you know, kind of made it into a joke. That's the way I made it.
You found a way to get through it.
Yep.
We're talking to Mary Beth Crawley, a former U.S. Army nurse in Vietnam, and Kim Heikkila, the author of Sisterhood of War, Minnesota Women in Vietnam, on Minnesota Military Radio on Twin Cities News Talk, AM 1130. Kim, in part of the book, you talk about this group of nurses and Mary Beth got involved in the Women's Vietnam Memorial. Can you
yes.
tell us about that a little
yes.
bit?
Yes. It's interesting that the memorial that now stands at the east end of the wall in Washington, D.C., originated here in the Twin Cities area with Diane Carlson Evans, who was an Army nurse, and D.M. Boulay, who had also been an Army nurse. And they were fine with the wall. You know, they said when the wall was built, they both thought it was fine. But then the statue that was added to the wall of the three combat veterans or combat soldiers, Diane said, that's when I started having a problem, because now we see veterans depicted in the flesh and blood as men, and so we need to also get women represented. And so they started that effort right here.
And Mary Beth, were you involved in that effort as well?
I was. I had been contacted initially, I think, by Diane Evans, and both she and D.M. Boulay had asked me if I'd speak in front of some groups. So I kind of started out with smaller groups and worked my way up to larger ones, and that doing that also helped to raise funding for the project.
And we finally got that installed just a few years after the wall went up.
Mm-hmm.
And you've seen it?
Oh yes, I was there for the first time it was shown. Uh-huh.
That was in 1993, so almost mm-hmm. 10 years.
Was it as tough to see as it was for me the first time I saw the wall?
I'd seen the wall prior to that, and I think the Women's Memorial was it was a little more difficult to see that, and I think a little more tearful too.
Now, Mary Beth, I have to ask you, in the book, it talks about you and the rest of the nurses that you're writing about getting together and really helping each other through PTSD-type symptoms. Can you briefly mm-hmm. tell us about that?
I think the nurses who served in Vietnam and are from Minnesota are a little unique in the way that I can't even quite remember how we all kind of came together. I know I worked with another nurse at the VA who was a Vietnam vet, and then we just kind of happened upon other people and all started talking about things, and nothing terribly formal to begin with. But I think different nurses had different needs, and trying to find from the VA that there wasn't a whole lot for us there, and having to kind of create it ourselves with the help of a clinical nurse there by the name of Kay Ryan. And she pulled everything together and got things rolling, I think might have been in the early 90s.
So one way or another, all the things you'd seen and experienced, you all kind of buried. But as time goes by, you need to get it out and deal with it.
Yep.
And
yep.
So you pulled together and did that.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And it helped.
It was quite an experience. In the, Kim, in the conclusion of the book, you show an example from Lynn Bauer when she's talking about she was caring for a young GI one night, and he proposed to her, and she politely refused. And he came back and said, "You have to promise me that you will live, that you will use your senses, you'll smell the flowers." And she responded to that by saying that she's been trying to live that promise for all those 18-year-olds that never got past 18. To her, every day is a gift, and living her life fully as possible is her final gift to the boys she had cared for when she was barely more than a girl. I'm sure all of your nurses, Mary Beth, I'm sure you had experiences similar to that. And how difficult is it to remember those things?
I don't think it's difficult to remember. It's probably difficult to continue. I don't think you forget anything that happened in a war. And I think the remembering helps, too, to kind of give it more of a purpose. And those of us who are still around here, I think that is our obligation and our duty to go on for those who didn't.
And thank goodness we had thousands of nurses over there helping those folks, the my fellows, soldiers and airmen that got wounded.
Mm-hmm.
Kim, quite an effort to put together in this book. What did you learn from it?
Well, I learned that idea that I had grown up with, that you should never ask a veteran about it, wasn't necessarily the way to go. I think you need to, you know, handle, as somebody who is not a veteran, you have to handle veteran stories with care, but that it is better to ask and better, as Mary Beth was saying, to remember and to honor and to pay tribute to what veterans did, whether they were nurses or combat veterans or, you know, had a desk job, that those stories are important to tell and they're important to share. And for civilians like myself, they're important to listen to.
Kim, you did a great job of writing that book. I read it cover to cover.
Thanks.
Where is it available?
It's available at the Minnesota History Center bookstore, at some Barnes & Nobles around the cities. It's, I believe, also at Common Good Books. And it's also at Amazon.com and BarnesandNoble.com.
Ladies, thank you for joining us today on Minnesota Military Radio.
Thank you.
Thank you.
That was Kim Heikkilä, the author of Sisterhood of War, Minnesota Women in Vietnam, and Mary Beth Crowley, a former U.S. Army nurse in Vietnam. We're just about out of time. I'd like to thank you for listening to this edition of Minnesota Military Radio Hour. And I'd like to thank our other guests, J.B. Ball from Tee It Up from the Troops, Commissioner Larry Shalado, the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, and finally, Minnesota's Adjutant General, Major General Rick Nash. Please join us next week as we talk about the 3M's Department of Defense Freedom Award, and we visit with the Minnesota National Guard's Captain Nate Foster from Iraq. That's next Sunday morning at 7, right here on Twin Cities News Talk, AM 1130. I'm Tom Lyons, and I hope that you make a difference in someone's life this week.
You've been listening to the Minnesota Military Radio Hour with host Tom Lyons. Tom is the founder and owner of Phalon Partners Limited, a merger and acquisition advisory firm located in Minneapolis. He's also a Vietnam veteran of the United States Air Force. We hope you found this program to be informative and entertaining. This has been a production of Clear Channel, MinnesotaMilitaryRadioHour.com, the Minnesota National Guard, BeyondTheYellowRibbon.org, and the Minnesota Department of Veteran Affairs. Podcasts of this program are available at MinnesotaMilitaryRadioHour.com. Thanks for listening.